We are in an interview with Dr. and Mrs. John Boitnot in their home in Bridgewater, Virginia, on the 15th of April, 1978. I wonder, Dr. Boitnot, if you would begin this discussion by giving us some background on your own family, your parents, your grandparents, uncles, aunts, any part that you'd like to sort of bring in for a capsulized assessment or scheduling of who your people were, and then we'll try to develop some more of your family history from that point.
I was born and reared in Franklin County, Virginia. My father was Christopher Boitnot. He married Sarah Elizabeth Knaff. I lived at home with my parents until I was about 17. Then I went away to school. I went to Daleville Academy, spent 3 years there in the academy, dropped out for a year, then went back to Daleville for the first 2 years of college. After that period, I taught in the public schools for 2 years, 1 year at Boone Mill, Virginia, 1 year at Natural Bridge, Virginia. Then I came to Bridgewater College and graduated in 1925 after a 2 year stay. While in college, I met Nell Kirsch, and after graduation in early June, we were married on June the 30th, 1925.
Let's let your wife give us her background.
Well, I was born near Bridgewater. My parents were W. Claude Kirsch and Elizabeth Catherine Karikoff. And I had lived most of all of my young childhood days in right near Bridgewater. We lived on a farm outside of Bridgewater. Then we moved into Bridgewater, and I attended Bridgewater College as a day student. And as he said, I met my husband here. He came here as a junior, and we spent 2 years at Bridgewater College as students and were married right afterwards. And then from Bridgewater, here after graduation, we taught in Timberville, down near. He was principal, and I taught in the high school. And from
what was your field?
English. And from there we went. Did you tell them that you went to the University of Virginia? You stopped before you got that far, didn't you?
Yes.
All right.
Should we go on?
Just fine. Yeah, just be informal about it.
Well, as Nell said, we taught at Timberville for 5 years, 1925 to 30. In 1930-31, I had my first experience as a college teacher. I came to Bridgewater College and taught for 1 year while Dr. Fred Dove was on a leave of absence to complete his graduate studies. Then, following that year, we went to the University of Virginia to continue my graduate studies, and we were there from 31 to 33. While there, our son John was born at Charlottesville. From Charlottesville, we went to Winchester, where I taught in Hanley High School for 2 years. Following that experience, we went to Kansas and joined staff at McPherson College.
Now, you came there in the Department of Education.
If you want me to go on...
this is fine.
As I said, we went to Kansas and joined the staff at McPherson in 1935. I was in the Department of Education, and 1939, Dr. Swam asked me to serve as dean. Dr. J.D. Bright had withdrawn and joined the staff at Washburn University. So I served in capacity as dean from 39 to 46. Altogether, we lived in McPherson for 11 years. We built a little house on Euclid Street in 1939, and of course sold that when we left in 46. Our stay in McPherson was a highlight of our lives. We enjoyed our work very greatly there. We still recall so many good friends who were students and faculty members. Many of the faculty members have now gone on, but we remember so many of them with great delight. I've already mentioned Dr. Swam. I've always regarded him as something of an educational godfather. It was he who invited me to join the staff at Manchester College in 1946, which I did, but for various reasons did not remain very long. Invitation to come to Bridgewater was extended in 47, and of course I've been in Bridgewater ever since that time.
Did you come to Bridgewater as dean?
I came to Bridgewater as dean and served in that capacity for 20 years. I retired in 1967. We've been in retirement now for almost 11 years.
I might make an observation which your comment recalls, prompted my recalling. I very much admired that house you built on Euclid Street. It somehow or other was almost an ideal piece of architecture in my mind. And when we came to McPherson, not too long after you left, we built a house on almost exactly the same outside design over on Carey Street, where we lived for a number of years. We modified it some after we'd been in it, but it was pretty nearly patterned after your house. As a matter of fact, I think I was taking a course in architectural drawing when you were building that house, and I think I had done some things on paper in my imagination.
Dr. Bartnoff, where did you live before you built the house there on Euclid?
We lived on the house on the corner of Euclid and I don't remember the name of that street. It was a half a block west of where I built.
It would have been about Olivet, wouldn't it?
Olivet is correct,
now,
yes.
I'm trying to think which house would that have been. It wasn't the stucco house on the corner.
No, it wasn't
frame
the frame house.
On the north side of the street?
Yes, it's on the north side of the street.
I think
it was a corner house. Dr. Swam's house was second door north
right
of that corner.
Yes.
Mrs. Heckman was next to our house.
Yes.
She was on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
The house we lived in for 3 years on that corner later became the president's home. Dr. Peters lived there.
You know, I might comment on that house we discovered on this research thing we're doing in talking with Raymond C. Florey in Paradise, California, who is a member of Dr. Moeller's class and with several others has had a circle letter going for 71 years. He was in school when that house was built, and his father built it, and he helped build that house. For a long while, that was known as the Florey House, and I think out on the sidewalk yet, there are some Florey names in the brick. The DeCourcys have told me this, and they live there now.
You remember Wes DeCourcy and
Bernie Rowe? Oh, yes. Yes.
That's where they live. They've lived there for quite a number of years now.
We have happy recollections of that house. Della Lehman lived with us for several years.
Is that right?
And
where did she live? Where did
she had a room there.
Where did she would be in the upstairs?
Yes. And then Wilbur and Una Yoder had an apartment with us in that house.
I didn't know that.
Is that right?
Yes, they lived there for a year or two until they built a house down on Euclid.
On East Euclid, uh-huh.
Yes.
I didn't know they lived there.
Yeah.
They built a house. They're living now north of First Street in a new area.
Yes.
Well, I didn't know. Was that house organized? Where was the apartment? Was that also
upstairs?
Upstairs.
There were just rooms upstairs. There were about four rooms, I think. And Wilbur and Una had at least two of them, maybe a third one. And I think there were two baths in the house, so we were able to work it out reasonably well.
I wonder, since you mentioned Della Lehman, is there anything you'd care to say about Della Lehman as somebody in your house? I know a lot of people said a lot of things about Della Lehman, and she's an interesting lady.
Della was a very interesting lady. She was fond of our son John and our dog. I remember on one occasion she was sitting on the davenport. Our dog was so friendly, he jumped up on the davenport and licked her in the face. She had a gleeful time over that. You know, we have many happy memories with Della and also with the Yoders who lived with us.
Did Della ever, this is kind of a question you may not care to respond to, but we're not trying to, you know, in any way downgrade people. I think just trying to get some reaction. Did Della ever cause you any housekeeping problems? Did she leave things around in the road? I can think of her office and something.
Yes. Well, we didn't bother her as far as her housekeeping was concerned. She had a room upstairs and I guess you could call it a kitchen, very temporary affair. And she did her own cooking and she would come and go as she pleased.
Did she actually get her own meals pretty much the time, or did she eat out? She did actually come in there, I suppose, and get her meals.
Yes, she got her meals pretty well. She ate with us a lot. We enjoyed having her. But she... that didn't bother me so much because she was upstairs and not. She didn't bother me that way, but I have. I know she did have a problem with that.
Well, this bothered her a good deal, I know.
Yeah.
She's an interesting woman who could do the most unorthodox things, and you loved her in spite of it.
That's right.
Not everybody could have had that kind of a mix.
No.
She was quite some character.
She was. She enjoyed life.
Yes, she did. Was she traveling at that time? Was she traveling to Europe every now and then?
No,
I think her European trips were after we left McPherson. I heard through some source that she did considerable travel by bicycle in Europe.
I think this woman had the incredible capacity to travel further on less money than anybody I have ever heard of. she could almost just float from place to place without any money, almost literally. Yes. This is amazing.
I remember as a very interesting teacher. As far as I could tell, the students always enjoyed her classes. As I've stated before, I remember so many people. I enjoyed working with not only Dr. Swam, but Dr. Peters, as well as other members of the faculty. Professor Hess, I remember so well, and his uniqueness.
Would you have regarded Professor Hess in faculty meeting or in committee meeting? Was he hard to get on board, or would you regard him as pretty agreeable with a majority opinion on committee? Do you have any reaction there? He always seemed a little brittle, you know, in the classroom.
Professor Hess was very exacting in time schedule, for example. Students seemed to respect him and enjoy his work, even though he was quite exacting with them. In committee meeting, I valued his judgment very highly. I had a very warm feeling for Professor Hess in the Council on Education. And I think his advice was always well received by the Council on Educational Matters.
Did you in those days, and I'm not quite sure that I'm following you all the way here, did you make some assessment of the qualifications of student teachers in those days? Was this a part of your function? I was just kind of wondering how that was handled, whether committees there passed some judgment as to whether people should move into the teaching profession.
Well, my teaching field was education, and even after I became dean, I continued to teach. And I also gave general oversight to the student teachers who did their practice teaching in the public schools. I worked mostly with the critic teachers and, of course, held regular interviews with the student teachers while they were doing their practice teaching.
But you probably, at present we have a committee that really either recommends or denies to a student the right to be certified by the state. We are the authorizing institution. Was anything like that present then, or did you just give them the training and...
We gave them the training, and they received their certificate from the state. The college did not certify them. They only gave them the training and recommended certification. So I think your present practice probably... much more elaborate, and more responsibility probably rests with the college than it did in those days.
Well, I took practice teaching under that system, but I guess I don't know what all went on in your office or elsewhere.
Nope.
I guess I do remember needing to do something to get a certificate.
Yes, you were required to take certain courses. But we didn't have a formal committee that whose responsibility was to say yes or no to an applicant. Anyone who wanted to take the courses, if he made satisfactory grades and met the requirements set up by the state, could receive a certificate to teach. One of the requirements that they had to meet was to take... student teaching in the public schools, and my responsibility was to work with the public schools, first with the superintendent in setting up the overall plan, and then with the principals of each school in which we worked, and then finally with the critic teacher who took the student teacher on.
Did you normally find the critic teachers readily available enough of them to take care of students?
Yes, we didn't have any special problem with that. I remember we had student teachers in all of the elementary schools. There were three of them at the time, in the junior high school and also in the senior high school. Mr. Potwin was the superintendent of schools, the general superintendent, during all of my experience at McPherson. And the overall plan was worked out with him.
We might pick up a little bit more on your biographical background. You mentioned your parents. It would be helpful, probably, to identify, say, the brothers and sisters of your father and of your mother, if that comes to mind readily. In the case of both of you, so we get a little bit of a spread so we can make a tie-in with that. And maybe their spouses, if that comes to mind. If not, it's not all that important, perhaps.
On the Boitnot side, I can trace the family back only to great-grandfather. Great-grandfather Justice Boitnot. Probably came indirectly from France. Boitnot is a French name. Although I haven't been able to trace him directly to France. He appeared in Franklin County, Virginia as early as 1808. The Boitnot family is not a large one. There are perhaps more of them in Franklin County, Virginia, and Roanoke City, Virginia, than any other section of the United States, although a few have spread across to Kansas and as far as California. On my mother's side, the Knapp family has been in the States for many years. The great, great, great grandfather came from Germany near the border of Switzerland in about 1749. He married Katharina Florey in Pennsylvania about 1755. After some years in Pennsylvania, he moved his family to Frederick County, Maryland. And after 10 to 15 years, he moved his family to Franklin County, Virginia. He settled there about 1782. He had a large family of 11 children. All of them had large families. So the descendants from this one family number into the hundreds and perhaps thousands. They're scattered under various names like Knapp, and closely related Bowmans and Floreys, scattered throughout the United States. The earliest one, my great-great-great-grandfather, was thought to be a minister in the Church of the Brethren, then called the Dunkers. I've found no official record of his ministry, but it is thought that he held services in his home for his own family and perhaps neighbors. and then several of my ancestors on the NAF side have been affiliated with the Brethren. Several of them have been ministers and fairly widely known in their section of the state, at least. I have a great many relatives, close relatives still, in Franklin County, Virginia. I have very few close relatives here at Bridgewater, because Roanoke is 110 miles south, so we go there frequently.
Could you identify some of the uncles and aunts?
Yes. I had one uncle, Uncle John Naff, who was well-known minister in the Church of the Brethren, especially in Franklin County. He lived in the Antioch Church congregation and was elder, moderator of that church for a good many years. I had another uncle, George Naff, who was a traveling man. He traveled and he lived in Roanoke, Virginia, some years, and then he moved back to Franklin County, where he raised a rather large family. He was a well-known Sunday school teacher in the Brick Church congregation, which is the oldest Brethren church in Southern Virginia. That church was founded in 1848, although the Brethren, there were a lot of them in Franklin County long before that, beginning with this great-great-grandfather who came there in 1782, and also the Flory family, which came at the same time. Both families came from Maryland and settled there about the same time. Me, I get off on the tangents and I don't know where to stop.
That's really exciting. Not very many people know as much about their family as you do, and this makes it tremendously interesting. Don't feel restrained. Just go as long as you will on this.
Well, my great-grandfather was Abram Naff. He was a well-known minister in the Church of the Brethren. It has been said that he could almost quote the entire Bible from memory, I guess because he read it so much. But he preached not only in the local community, but by horseback, went as far as North Carolina and many counties surrounding Franklin County, which was his home county. I might add that the farm on which I grew up was a part of the farm that was granted of the farm that was granted to Jacob Naff in 1782. My oldest brother still lives on the farm, so the land has been in the bloodline for approximately 200 years, which makes it of some interest. anybody else?
No. How many are there in your family?
There are 8 of us children. One died by an accident in childhood. He's about 2 years old. 7 of us grew to maturity. 5 of us are still living. My oldest brother still lives on the home place. He's 89 today.
What is his given name?
Henry.
Henry.
Next to Henry was Ivan. Ivan is deceased. Harry, just younger than I, is deceased. Maud and Ella, 2 sisters, both live in Roanoke, Virginia. Charlie, the youngest boy, lives in Beckley, West Virginia. I haven't counted them recently, but I have about 10 or 12 nephews and nieces. Most of them live in Roanoke and Franklin County. I have 1 nephew who lives in California. He's been with the space organization, whatever, NASA.
I think it would be good if you would identify on the tape what you mentioned a bit ago about having published something on the Boitnoss and working on the NAS, whatever you care to say about it.
Well, since I retired, one of my hobbies has been genealogy. We haven't known much about the Boitnot family, so I decided to delve into it a little. And I finally came up with a book of about 350 pages on the Boitnot family, which was published in 1971. After completing that, I decided to work on the genealogy of the Knapp family. So I've accumulated a mass of material, and we can clearly trace the ancestors for 200 years, and we have some tentative identification of the family going back to Switzerland for as far back as 1340. One character, the name of Adam Knapp, who is a probable ancestor, won some fame in the Battle of Cappel, which was fought in 1531. It was a battle between the Protestants, the Swiss Protestants, under the leadership of Zwingli, and the Catholic forces. Zwingli's teaching were quite similar to Martin Luther's. They were contemporaries. The Catholic forces in the south of Switzerland became alarmed at his teaching, opposed them, finally resulted in a fierce battle at Cappel, which is about 15-20 miles directly south of Zurich. The Protestant forces under the leadership of Zwingli were greatly outnumbered, and the Catholic forces won. But Zwingli's doctrines, of course, were not lost. this Adam Neff, in the disarray of the battle, rushed in to save the flag, and the historians who have studied the matter say he seized the sword and severed the head of one of the enemy, rescued the flag. The flag has been preserved, and Adam received a great many honors for his brave deeds. They gave him a manor with a body of land. They bestowed put a window in the cathedral. They gave him a coat of arms, and finally gave this estate to him in 1550. The house that was on the manor is still owned by the Naff family. It's called the Naffin House. It's located at Capel. And it's still kept open as a sort of a meeting place for the family. And they have agreed to have a reunion there every 50 years. And the next anniversary, which will be the, 450th anniversary, will be in 1981, October 11th, 1981. If I'm still kicking, I may go back.
We visited
last summer, and I have a picture of the place. There are a great many people who bear the name in Switzerland today. More of them spell it with one F, N-A-F. A lot of them spell it N-A-E-F. And a lot of them spell it N-E-F. And then N-E-F-F. All of those names exist in considerable numbers, especially in the northern part of Switzerland, the so-called German-speaking and Protestant sections of Switzerland.
This is all very interesting. Maybe, Mrs. Boitnot, is there something you'd want to add about your brothers and sisters, uncles and aunts, so we can sort of get them?
Well, let's don't forget John
and
his family.
Tell him, Matthias.
Well, I'll let my husband tell about my family. He knows more about my family than I do, because he's also delved into that and traced my ancestry.
I've worked on her family just a little. She's about the sixth generation of Kirsches. Her great-great-great-grandfather, Matthias Kirsch, came from Heidelberg, Germany in 1751, I believe is the date, and he settled east of Harrisonburg in what is now Rockingham County. At that time it was Augusta County. Later he moved to Augusta County and is probably buried in a little plot right adjacent to the Shenandoah Valley Airport, which is at Weir's Cave. There have been Kirsch families since his time in Rockingham, Augusta County, down to the present time. but the name has not spread widely in the United States.
Small family.
It is a small family, but it's been here a long time. Well, do you think of something else to say?
No.
Didn't you get your brothers and sisters?
No, they were four in my family, two boys and two girls. Both my brothers are have passed away. And my sister, Arnold Kirsch, was my oldest brother, and Edgar Kirsch, and Anne, my sister, is now living in Bridgewater.
Tell her who she married.
She married Hugh Modern. And he was
from Tennessee,
a chemist. And he's also passed away, and she's living here now in Bridgewater in the home.
Now, I think we didn't get, we had the mention of the birth of your son back in the early 30s. We'll have to get his pedigree in here and his family and all this sort of thing.
Well, as we stated a while ago, John was born at the University Hospital in Charlottesville in 1932, and he, of course, went through the early grades in McPherson while we lived there. Then 1 year of high school at Manchester. Then he completed high school when we moved here. Graduated from Bridgewater College in 1953. He went from here in 1953 to the Johns Hopkins University Medical School, where he obtained his M.D. degree, and he continued at Johns Hopkins Medical School for his internship and for his residency, and specialized in pathology. He is now professor of pathology at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He's married and has two children. He married Carolyn Pope of Martinsburg, West Virginia. She was a nurse and a graduate of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing. Yes, two children, as I've said. Karen, the oldest one, is 18, and Greg is 16. Karen will be ready for college next year. She hadn't quite decided where she'll go. What else?
Well,
one thing, he can delete what he doesn't like.
Yeah.
Well, we aren't, we can stop that operation.
As I stated before, I remember so many people, students and faculty members at McPherson. I rather hate to start mentioning names, but I will mention a few. I remember so well Raymond Florey and his wife, both of whom were students while at Bridgewater, while at McPherson, graduating, I guess, the first year I became dean there. I remember so many others. I recall many pleasant experiences with Wayne Gysett. who is now president of Bridgewater College. He likes to tease me, and I try sometimes to turn the table on him. I tell him I sit up here and watch over him. I haven't watched over him quite as closely since I retired 10 years ago. But I keep an eye on him and see that he doesn't go too far afield.
Well, I reluctantly decided that I would fill out the a vacancy here for a year where another lady had been teaching. And I enjoyed it, but each year I'd think, well, I'll stop. But in place of that, I went to Madison and at night and summer school and finally got my master's and stayed on then for the rest of the time, as long as my husband stayed. We both retired then together. But it was a pleasant experience here.
So you taught here at Bridgewater for what, a dozen years, 15 years?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And you hadn't taught in that interim period after
no,
your high school experience?
No. Never did teach after the high school, 5 years of teaching in high school. And I don't know how I could ever, when I think back over it, how I ever could have been persuaded to try it again after all those years, but I did and enjoyed it.
Were you teaching full-time?
Full-time for most of the time.